Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at the Score. And no, I'm just kidding.
Afternoons on the Score.
Three receivers split to the right as Fields breaks the huddle. They're in a tight bunch to the right side of the formation as Harris to his left. Now Cordero Patterson moves right to left across the formation in front of Fields. Back to pass. Throws over the middle of the field. It's Calvin Austin. He has a step. Austin heading straight up the middle of the field. Inside the 10 to the 5. Touchdown. Calvin Austin. 55 yards from Fields to Austin.
Oh, that's sweeter than Aunt Nellie's blueberry pie, baby. What a job catching that rock over the middle.
So here we are, the Spiegel and Holmes show, week three of the NFL season, and things are going pretty well for Justin Fields. Just to give you a little insight of what's going on inside the studio, we looked up before the show started, and there was a graphic on Russell Wilson being like, oh, he's back at practice today. We're like, you could probably stay out another week if you need to, at least another week and probably a couple more weeks with the way that Justin Fields has been playing. And I wouldn't say that the Steelers are winning because of Justin Fields, but I would say that Justin Fields is playing winning football. And it's clear that the coaching in Pittsburgh has gotten through to him in a way so far that his coaching in Chicago didn't. Quicker release time. He's seeing the field, I think, better, and he's making better choices.
He was sacked with the Bears on 12.35% of his dropbacks. So far in three games, sacked with the Steelers on 7% of his dropbacks.
Oh, that's sweeter than Aunt Nellie's blueberry.
Aunt Nellie's blueberry pie, baby.
It's helpful when you don't have to worry about some of that stuff.
60% completion rate with the Bears, 73% with the Steelers. They run the ball. Mike Tomlin is a badass. That entire environment for a coaching staff and for players is much, much better. Justin is also older and he is growing. Credit to him. I'm happy for him. You can't remove the fact that it was time to choose whether to pay him or not from the Bears equation. And we can talk about if people have regrets out there. I do not, but I'll wait to say some of that until we get some more of the callers in. But I wanted to let you know about this, to be specific on the coaching, okay? Starting 8 months ago, Justin decided with the private quarterback coach, Oliver Bozeman, to go back to the old way of doing his footwork. Remember the Bears switched that up?
Yep. And I remember everyone here being like, you don't have to do that. You could just have him do what he does and make him comfortable.
So he went back to the way he did it at Ohio State, and going back to that allowed him to see plays faster, according to Oliver Bozeman.
And do you remember to add to that, Speaks?
Yes, sir.
What the Steelers said to him when he got there, They said, close your eyes and tell us how you set up. And he set up the way that he's used to setting up.
Yep.
And they were like, okay, great. Now we can go do this.
They supported his work with the private quarterback coach. We've heard this with pitchers and pitching coaches in the offseason, haven't we?
We heard this with the Bears and Caleb Williams, which I think is a good thing, too.
I agree. So he just wanted to be on time and be accurate when he got to camp. Like, they didn't care too much about the footwork. They just said, close your eyes, whatever's most comfortable. And so the coaching staff immediately earned the quarterback's trust, accelerated his comfort in the system. And Arthur Smith said, he's done it multiple ways. You're just trying to build trust. He can't be so rigid. So Arthur Smith, I mean, it's a different guy on a different timeline, and they need a floor. They need him to hit a floor quickly, and he has. The question of what the ceiling is very much still there.
100%. And I think that most people in Chicago, even inside of the quarterback wars, I think most people were like, you know, I really like that guy.
For sure.
And I want that guy to succeed. And it sucks that it's not here because he seemed to have all the things that you would want in a guy who's representing your franchise. I don't know if there's anyone who disliked Justin Fields. And I think people were so tantalized at the idea of Caleb Williams that it made it easy for them. Here's the thing. When there's a breakup, are you magnanimous because you think that you've got the better hand? I think there are a lot of people that were going, I really hope Justin does really well in Pittsburgh. But this Caleb, let me tell you about this Caleb.
Uh-huh.
Caleb's going to be blah, 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 blah. And yeah. I think that's what was going on. And now 3 weeks into it, you're like, well, wait a minute. We really cared about Justin. And Justin's all doing right. really well.
All right, now you're pushing me. Now you're pushing me. So I got to say it. All right, you're pushing me, Lawrence. You're trying to be all coy. You're playful, but I know who you are. And I remember where you were, you know, for a long time on the Fields train. Dude had 40 games here. It was time. He and the Bears ran out of time together. I said I root for it. I fully believe a Geno Smith-esque second chapter could come for Justin. Maybe this is it already. I still want a quarterback with a higher ceiling, and I feel like we have one. I have 0% regrets.
Okay.
0%.
No regrets?
No regretskies. I live with no regretskies.
Okay, good. Let me add something else, and we can't, so it's not so binary.
I was going to hold back the take, but you made me go firing.
Don't hold back. The other part of this is how quickly we want quarterbacks to get it. And this is where I think we should be fair to Caleb.
Yeah, I agree with you.
When you look around and you go, oh, man, look at what Jaden Daniels has done. His offense hasn't punted in the last two games that he's played, and things are really clicking for him. You need to be fair to Caleb, too, and go, make sure that you're talking about the entire situation. That's all I wanted people to do with Justin, is understand that a lot of the stuff that was going wrong was not his fault. And they put him in a lot of bad situations. But after 40 games, you have to. It makes sense to move on. I get that. But I look at the situation, and I found this quote, and shout out to Tanny for going to get the sound on this. Listen to Malik Willis, who burned out in Tennessee, and they moved on to a quarterback who I think is not good at all. Listen to what he said about what's happened these last couple of weeks for him, filling in for Jordan Love.
More than anything, I think it's just a different opportunity. I only got 3 starts here as a rookie. And like I said before, I just wasn't ready at that point in time. And I've had a lot of time to just, you know, work hard and just grind every day in order to make use of my next opportunity, which I've been just trying to do this last 2 weeks. And I think more than anything, you just try to continue to work hard and understand that you don't know when the opportunity will come, but you have to be ready for it if you get it.
Man.
I mean, love that.
I love that too. I'm glad you played it. I mean, it's the finances of trying to take advantage of the quarterback's rookie deal have become such a driver in the decision process of whether to play guys or not.
The clock.
The clock is such a massive deal. It's why the concept of a separate salary cap for the quarterback position is an intriguing one because of the strategy that would allow in terms of how you do it. That's another conversation, but it's like the decisions that Green Bay has made to sit guys and wait are so infrequent because you got to have a truly great one who's undeniable to really do that these days. You're more likely to cut bait and try to do it again in 3 years and lather, rinse, repeat the entire damn process because of the way that the clock dictates strategy.
So let's talk about this with the people. 312-644-6767 is the number. You've seen Malik Willis succeed like out of nowhere. You've seen Jaden Daniels do something that no rookie quarterback has ever done. He completed 91% of his passes. I know that someone who's driving right now, like, what the bleep did Lawrence just say?
Yeah.
91% of his passes.
Converted 3 fourth downs. Threw an absolute killer dime on the final drive to put that thing away. They've gone 14 straight drives.
With a defender in his lap.
Oh, yeah. At 14 straight drives where they haven't kneeled down, they've scored. 14 consecutive drives without a kneel down have been scoring drives. What'd you say? Someone said they haven't punted in 2 weeks.
They haven't punted in 2 weeks. That's how good Washington's offense. So I get that the Bears fan might feel a little quarterback envy with this.
Yeah.
Just be fair to Caleb. Let him, because he's figuring it out. And I'm telling you, I think that most people were seeing it, and it wasn't just the yardage. Like the yardage, I feel like yardage is such a bad indicator if a quarterback is playing well. I think operationally, Caleb Williams is way better going into week four than he was in week one. And I think it's pretty clear to see that. Like from getting the play to getting into the huddle to getting to the line of scrimmage, make sure that you give him some grace too, even when you see some of these other guys succeed. 312-644-6767 is the number. Let's go to the west side and talk with Don. Hey, Don, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? So, real quick, first, Justin Fields was still being a Bears uniform. Caleb Williams wasn't available. The whole Patrick Mahomes, CJ Stroud thing, even though it probably didn't matter to this regime, or so they say, it mattered a little bit. And then, you know, you don't want to pass up on another generational talent. The Bears also had an opportunity to hire Arthur Smith. You know, if they would have did so, let's live in this alternate universe and, you know, they keep Fields, maybe draft Marvin Harrison, whatever. You know, the Bears probably would be 3-0-2. The only caveat to that, I probably said, the offensive line, and that, of course, the play caller, because Arthur Smith, of course, was already signed by somebody else. Caleb Williams, I just think, man, yeah, we got to be patient, man. You can't pay attention to what the other guy's doing, man. Look in your own head, man. You know, watch your own paper. Don't mind other people's papers, man. But, all right, you know, you guys go ahead.
Thanks, Don.
Don, thank you so much. I'm feeling where Don is coming from on this. I love living in the alternate universe, what if, sliding door. I reference it a lot. The idea of what would have happened with Justin plus the picks. Because that, to me, was the argument. It's not straight up.
I know.
It's Justin plus the picks what ends up happening. We'll never know, but it's nice to see him and some good coaching. Like, Tomlin is on my list of coaches slash managers, he's at the top of it that I would want to play for.
I mean, just so incredibly solid and in control, and you get the sense there is no BS, and you know what the effort is, and the standard is the standard, Joe Cowley. Let's go back to Fields and picks, though.
I can't give you all the ingredients to the hot dog. You might not like it.
how about the Joe Cowley face turn that's happened, too, on Justin Fields?
Oh, yeah.
Saying he got that bear stank off of him.
Oh,
now.
My God. Of course. Of course.
But do not care.
That is correct. Going back to the idea of if you had kept Fields and gotten picks and take Marvin Harrison and all that stuff. At the end of this year with Arthur Smith and Fields, or right now, like the caller said, if they were 3-0, is your answer at quarterback in the house? Like your long-term answer at quarterback in the house?
I don't think that you can answer that question yet. I do think that it's on the table.
You think the Steelers are going to get to the end of this year and say that's our answer at quarterback for the next 5 to 10 years?
I think that they, maybe not 5 to 10, but I do think the idea of a bridge contract, because here's the problem.
Short window and a floor to go ahead and try to be competitive for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And do you want to do that? Or if you're Ryan Poles or you're you, do you want to shoot your shot at a quarterback who could be generationally great and you got your Joe Burrow or your Pat Mahomes or your Josh Allen for 10 or 15 years?
And because...
My answer on that is still very much that choice.
I got you. But if you're Mike Tomlin, though... Your team's never, ever going to be bad enough.
That's why. Well, you're right. That's why time and place matters. And you're Tomlin. You're trying to hold on. There have been whispers about Mike Tomlin's job security.
Absolutely.
Being this far into it. So you found a really good guy to be as your backup. Both Russell Wilson and Fields made perfect sense for what the Steelers need to do. Context.
I actually think that Russ being there is also helpful. As weird as he can sometimes be, I think that that's a quarterback where you should be looking at the way that he does stuff. And maybe he can't physically do some of that stuff anymore, but I think his mind is good. That's someone whose mind that you want to mine and go, oh, okay, now I understand why he's doing that. And we're seeing Justin do that a little bit more where it isn't just 1-2, I'm out. It's 1-2, throw it away. It's 1-2, wait a minute, if I come out here a little bit, to outside the tackle, I might be able to extend the play and throw it and not have to take a hit on that. That's Russ stuff right there.
Can I give you the Fields progress between game 2 and game 3 for the Steelers that I was reading about? First two starts for the Steelers, Justin Fields targeted just 6 passes between the numbers to the middle part of the field. those anticipatory throws. There you go, Dino from Mount Greenwood. Those anticipatory throws of throwing guys open in the middle of the field. Just six times. He was 4 of 6 against the Chargers. 10 of 14 in between the numbers for 114 yards.
And one of them went for a touchdown.
Correct. So Justin
Fields.
Run
after catch, but still. Yeah,
absolutely. But, and then there are his quotes about it, too. He's feeling better, feeling more confident. So there has been progress for Fields there. And I'm happy for him. I just still would. I have no regretskis.
The mayor of Hyde Park, Mario, joins us here on The Score.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Good.
Matthew. I feel like, first of all, I'm glad that the Bears did what they did in getting Caleb Williams, because I'm seeing it, not as much as I'd like to see it, but I'm seeing it. Besides all the prostrating that was done from November till the first time he took a snap for real, I still wish if the Bears had have taken that pick and traded it and got multiple picks for it, your offensive line problem would not be a problem. The biggest problem they have had since Justin Fields is that they didn't have anybody to properly block for him. The plays they're running for Caleb now are plays that they should have been running for Justin Fields. They call for a quarterback that can move out the pocket and run away and get some yards when they couldn't get any other way. And then ultimately, definitively, it's the coaching. The Bears are still in a coaching quagmire. And until they figure that part out
and
figure out where offensive linemen come from, it doesn't matter who's back there, man. It's going to be rough for Caleb. But I'm a Bears fan. I wish him well. I kind of see it. I just want to see more of it.
Thanks, Mario.
Glad you're on the mend, sir. Mario, one of the really good people.
It's a delightful man, Mario. A great music fan, very knowledgeable on the musical front.
Knows everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Good man.
Yeah, we've got some mutuals. Got some mutuals down there.
And thorough.
And thorough. Look, I they're in a coaching quagmire.
Giggity.
Feel free. But yeah, they could have fixed other problems, but I think they'd still have a quarterback problem. I think they would still have a quarterback problem. That's the worst problem to have.
Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe you traded the one and you traded down to two and you drafted Jaden Daniels. And then you were picking up offensive linemen along the way because you ransomed it off. I'm down with moving forward. Like I lost the Justin War and I'm okay with losing the Justin War. I wish him a ton of success. He just seems like a good kid that wanted to do well, and I'm rooting for him. I'm also rooting for Caleb, and I have come to really like the guy. Like, it's weird for me because I've kind of worked backwards on Caleb, where the player, I wasn't as high as other people were, but learning more about the guy and some of the stuff that was in my DMs and text messages from people around the NFL and college football, the stuff that they said about Caleb, I was like, this doesn't feel good. Like, what some of these people are saying. And the more that I got to hear from Caleb, the more I was like, I dig that dude.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm rooting for him, too. It's a weird place to be in.
Yeah, no, it's a weird one, and it's not something that you can fully gauge and judge right now. We have to give room for the possibility of continued Fields improvement, and we have to give room for the possibility of Caleb underperformance. As much as I don't think it's going to happen, I don't know for sure in terms of him meeting his potential. And a few textures have made the good point. Justin, in 3 years of hellacious pressure amidst a really awkward circumstance, very often had one moment where he said, I don't know, maybe coaching. That's it in terms of anything that you could be remotely bothered by from that guy. Let's see how well Caleb holds up if this thing is a mess.
Let's continue this discussion. There's another quarterback that I want to bring into this in a little larger of a picture, and we'll continue to take your phone calls, too. Hang in there. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until Cubs baseball on the score.
I just think the poise that we've seen from Jaden Daniels tonight and what Washington fans have seen through the first three games now is really something. It's rare.
You know, the beauty of Dan Quinn is that he's genuine. And I, you know, their head coaches you see across sports that can flip over the food table and act like they're mad or be the rah-rah guy. He is the rah-rah guy with the hat backward. His players love him. He's all in. He seems, at least in my opinion, to be the perfect guy to start this rebuild with the Commanders.
Well, what we know is how they interact with us, right? And Dan Quinn is about as professional as we deal with. He's amazing with the broadcasters, but you talk to the players and the teams that he has coached, they love him.
They're down in seven. This one is launched from McLaurin. He's got it. Touchdown. Touchdown, Terry McLaurin. Unbelievable on third down and seven. A great throw, great call.
Whatever, Joe Buck, whatever. You with your happiness and a quarterback who looks better than Caleb and a head coach who might be a better football man than our version of a football man. How's his beard? How's his haircut? All right. How's his lakefront home? Does he have an apiary? Does Dan Quinn have bees? I don't think so. Whatever. Stupid, happy Joe Buck. I don't like it.
Matt Gatsby up there in the North Shore with that spread that he's got going on. And Dan Quinn wears a backwards cap, so I don't even know if there's hair underneath there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there is, as a matter of fact.
He does the Griffey thing.
He's a tough, big, strong football man.
He is a tough, big, strong defensive football man.
I like Dan Quinn, but he's Quinnerflus. He's better than Eberflus. But he's
probably
he's that guy. He's a similar guy, but a stronger man and communicator, from what I've heard.
And then they match up Cliff Kingsbury with Jaden Daniels, which when we were talking earlier about the idea of, and I think it's a great question that you ask, Spiegs, like, did they just give a cursory, let's get the Caleb information interview with Cliff Kingsbury, or did they really think about the idea of, well, what if we just kept it rolling with those two guys, because they've had some success together in that short amount of time that he was at USC? And maybe they talked with Caleb. McCabe was like, I'm good on a change. Like, who knows what ended up happening there? But seeing how quickly they've gotten the Washington offense up and running and Jaden Daniels looking comfortable, I would understand if Bears fans were watching last night on ABC and being like, yo, like, that guy's a lot farther along. And I know that there are plenty of people that think that Jaden Daniels, and it's one of his problems, and I think he got better at it over the last 2 weeks, he still runs too much and still runs too upright because he's a slender dude. If you go back to his freshman year, I want to say he was six. I think Uncle Herm told us this. He was 6'5 and 180 when he walked on campus at Arizona State.
Man.
I think he's up to 210 now, but he just is gangly. He's just long. And when you see him take some of those hits, whether he was at LSU or ASU or now in the pros, you go, oh, he's gonna fold at some point if he keeps doing that. Doing a better job last night of sliding in those situations.
Protecting himself, getting out of bounds a couple of times. 55 career games in college for Jaden Daniels. A lot of pocket passer time on task. A lot of it on good offenses. You know, you bring up an interesting point about just like running it with your college guy. I mean, we see it all the time now with like quarterback and wide receiver, whether it was Burrow and Chase or, you know, Tua and Jalen Waddle or Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith, like putting those guys together, doing it with a coordinator is a possibility. But I mean, you kind of hinted at it earlier, the sweet spot of the hire for Shane Waldron by Matt Eberflus, it's a play caller for multiple years. So, you know, he can be the CEO of the offense while Matt doesn't do it. He had a defensive head coach as his boss. So he's used to running the room in full, you know, which Matt needed. Suddenly available, was Shane Waldron. Got let go out there when Pete Carroll was gone. Not a hot head coach candidate. So not a lot of people fighting for him.
And you don't have to fear that if you're a head coach.
That's the last part that you hinted at earlier in the show. So you wonder how, if all those things coalesce to make Matt Eberflus feel good about that hire.
It's something to keep in mind. I don't know that for sure.
I don't know for sure either, but I mean, all those factors are true. And if this is a bad hire, which it seems to be, it's going to doom Matt Eberflus, and it should.
I'm not with you on it was a bad hire.
I said if. Because I really fear they botched it. I really fear.
I get that.
Got Softy Mahler in my head, man. Got Jackson Smith and Jigba in my head. So it's not just what we've seen.
The JSN stuff.
Woo! It's got people questioning the moxie and the communication of the man. That's a little scary right now. And then we just saw a need for an adaptation by an offensive coordinator, and he failed miserably.
He did.
Good luck to y'all.
That's right, Jackson. You're right. So last night I finished watching the game, and I was looking at a little bit of the postgame coverage. And SVP, you know, he's a DMV guy. Like, he's from the area.
Loves to stand in lines. DMV.
That too. And
he loves grabbing numbers off that thing where, like, you just pull a number.
That deserved a rim shot, but that's okay.
No, shut up, Chuck. Took a shot.
Chuck thanked us and welcomed us to the new show. So don't you be saying anything bad about my guy, Chuck Legend.
I love Chuck. Congrats to his son, by the way.
How many? Congrats to his son, who's a head coach in the G League now.
Big thing for the Sorsky family.
I think that Bill Fickner would have something.
Go
to say
ahead,
about
Lawrence.
That.
I'm sorry.
You know what? You guys are good. This is our show. This is not the Lawrence Holmes show. This is our show.
Sam Wright.
So
glad you said it.
That's not what Mitch told me. He said, "Hey, Shane, be clear. This is Lawrence's show."
So staffers have said.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway,
think about Chuck. How many donuts did he mention? Did he get donuts for the Colts staff? Didn't he say he was going to do that, by the way?
Did he say that?
Bears lose to the Colts, I'm going to send donuts to the Colts.
You did promise us. I don't know if you'll actually fulfill it, but you said you'll buy the Colts team donuts as well.
What? No, wait a minute. I'm not going to buy the Colts team.
They
got 53 players.
I didn't make it up.
Chuck said it.
Do you want me to call him right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's the thing, Lawrence. He said that he was going to buy donuts for the Colts. Then 3 hours later, he forgot that he said it.
Look, we both have done overnight shows.
Oh, man, you can forget a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of things that can go wrong when you do an overnight show and you forget things.
You bet. I once offered to buy bagels for the Kansas City Chiefs, and then I forgot it 3 hours later.
Like, there's 53 of those guys.
I can't
that's
do
a
that.
Lot of bagels.
Bagels are expensive.
That's not a thing. So
Shane just said, this is not on the air, but he said he'll buy Bialys for the entire Rams front office.
Oh. All of them.
It's amazing. So if the Bears lose to the Rams, Shane is getting Bialys for less Sneed and also more Sneed.
What?
What? I'm going to make pancakes for the Milwaukee Bucks if the Bulls don't beat them in their first matchup.
Well, I got some bad news for you. You better get that batter going, because there's going to be a problem.
I make great pancakes.
So we made contact?
Oh, yeah, we reached him.
Oh, this is great.
Uh-huh.
Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Bulls here on The Score, is joining us here on The Score on Spiegel and Holmes. Hey, Legend, what's up?
So Shane just gave me a little bit of a scoop here.
Yeah.
So I want to set the record straight. I did not buy donuts for the Colts because I was so upset with the game, but I did buy donuts for the staff of 670 The Score.
What?
Did you get any?
Oh, was that the Krispy Kremes that I saw left over here on a Monday?
Yes.
Oh, there were two boxes of Krispy Kremes over in the BBM kitchen. I availed myself of one just before our show started.
Oh, well then you, okay, great.
Then I did. Yes. Thank you, Chuck.
Because I was so disappointed because that was there are two kinds of losses. There's a loss and there's a bad loss. That was a bad loss.
Agreed.
And so I said, the Colts don't deserve this. So I said, but 670, because they're going to have a tough day at the office talking Bears the entire day. They deserve a little sugar, sugar.
That's beautiful. Hey, Chuck, have you heard the soundbite that Tanny now has? Have you sang the word what? Listen to it. Here, it's wonderful.
What?
And so that's you. And a texter says, it sounds like Chuck doing an impression of Chuck with that. And I think that's really good. Are you okay?
Can I hear that one more time?
Here it comes.
What?
Chuck, good. Have you heard the context of you saying, I'm going to buy donuts for the Colts, and then Robbie Triano telling you, you sure? And you said, I never said that. Have you heard the audio back yet?
No.
Okay, stand by, Chuck. You're going to hear it right now.
If the Bears lose to the Colts, I'm going to send donuts to the Colts.
You did promise us, I don't know if you'll actually fulfill it, but you said you'll buy the Colts team donuts as well.
What? No, wait a minute. I'm not going to buy the Colts team.
They
got 53 players.
I didn't make it up.
That's amazing. Well, you made a really good choice in giving the station donuts instead, because screw the Colts. We don't need
that. That's right. You know what? I can't begin to tell you how excited I am to have both of you in Afternoon Drive. And I mean that sincerely. I mean, I think it's great for the station. It's great for Chicago listeners. And it's great because the two of you are going to have terrific chemistry. And you know what? We got Bears football. We got the Bulls. We got the Blackhawks. We're going to have a steady diet of a lot of speculation about baseball, who's coming, who's going for the Cubs. So go for it.
Chuck, you're the best.
Legend, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
What?
I love it when people can be in on the bit. Oh, that makes it even better.
It's incredible. I remember a long time ago that Joel Myers and Rick Doc Walker were doing an NFL game, and Mac happened to be listening. It was playing on the Score. I was a producer at the time. And Rick Doc Walker, he really enjoyed a play, and he went, oh! And Joel Myers said, you love it, you big tight end. And it was really awkward. And so I immediately pulled it, and we played it all the time. Just, you love it, you big tight end. And one day we got Joel Myers and played it for him, and he said, can you play that again, please? Like, he just really enjoyed it.
I love that.
And leaned into it in the same way. Like, when you've become a soundbite, the right move is to enjoy it and realize you're now a part of the fabric of the show.
So remember when there was a show called Parkins and Spiegel? And
a little bit.
Occasionally,
no,
I would...
No. No? Not a bit. Well, no. Shane, do you remember that show?
Yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of nights thinking about that show.
Well, occasionally, I would do, like, backside crosstalk with you guys, because I would...
Yes.
You know, I'd be here for middays, and then I'd go to the United Center.
Absolutely.
And I'd do some stuff. And I would often end up talking with Chuck, like, once I got there. He wants to talk about more than just the Bulls. He is always like, he's like, Lawrence, let's talk about these Bears. What do you think's going on? And then he would just go into like a whole thing. So being able to give him some space,
it's beautiful,
on the Score airways,
talk
for him,
show host,
he's
man.
An old school talk show.
One of the first in this town.
Yes.
The first at WGN, hosted the first ever sports talk show specifically at WGN.
Yeah, legend. When you call him a legend, it is well earned.
I'm not kidding when I say it, and he gets mad when I say it, but I'm going to keep saying it.
You keep it, you know, right up there with like Dave Baum. Dave Baum back on WIND
Rich
back in the
King
day.
Back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Kingfish.
And the late Chet Kopic.
Absolutely. You can't deny it.
I'd like to.
Well, you could have, but you brought it up.
I did.
We're going to take a break. There's something going on maybe on the South Side tonight that we wanted to ask you about, and it's history. History! History! That's next on the Score.
1-2. Swing and miss on that changeup. And that's the ball game. It's the Sox getting swept in three games. And now they're tied with the 1962 Mets for 120 losses in the season. And there's still six games left in a regular season.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Tonight, the White Sox take on the Angels at 35th and Shields, and there's an opportunity to make history and become the modern era loss leader.
The losingest team in the history of Major League Baseball. A remarkable achievement. It's so funny, Lawrence, because when you do what we do, we're kind of always on the lookout for moments or achievements that feel emblematic of the larger situation. You know what I mean? Like, you'll come up, maybe it's a football game, but often it's a baseball game. You know what? That right there, that game, that's emblematic of the season. They're good, but not good enough. Or there was a disconnect or whatever. This truly, this achievement is going to be uniquely, perfectly emblematic of the decay of this once proud organization. The demise of this Jerry Reinsdorf vanity project that he has allowed to become so dysfunctional that they're breaking a record no one thought could be done. This will be the emblematic achievement in this sad chapter of White Sox history.
What's wild is a lot of us knew that they were going to be bad. There wasn't anyone who spent any time around the White Sox that thought that this year's team was going to do anything. I remember being with the Sox Machine guys, that awesome new place down there, the Rivola, is that right? Yeah, Rivola Theater down there.
Rivola?
What? Say it again.
I think it might be an M. I think it might be Romola or Ramonda.
Romova. That's what
Romova.
It is.
Romova.
Mamola.
Rock Mamola.
It's the one that
Jennifer Hudson, Chase. Quincy Jones, and Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper. Not Jay's the rapper. He's a very different guy.
Yes, very different thing. But I was there with a bunch of White Sox fans at the beginning of the season because the Sox Machine guys put on an incredible thing at the beginning of the season. And all of us were just kind of sitting there with the shrug emoji, knowing how bad this was going to be. There was really no real hope of it being good. And then even with some of the good things that happened inside of the season, you ended up trading it away. Even with all of that, I don't think that anyone was like, this is going to be the worst team ever.
No, because it's about more than just this season. That's what I'm saying. It's about the whole thing. When Jake Peavy in the news this week with some comments, and I'm sure a lot of people missed, about how dysfunctional it was when he was there. When Ozzie wouldn't talk to Kenny, and neither of them would talk to Herm Schneider, and Herm was Jerry's best friend, so Herm would run pitcher rehabs even more than Don Cooper, who didn't talk to anybody. Like, it's about that dysfunction and how far that put them behind. It's about how far they've been behind on analytics for decades and technology for decades. And now that they're trying to catch up, they're still so far behind. They don't know how to have departments talk to each other. It's about so much more than this year. It's about how they've been an organization that doesn't win in the margins, and now they've lost in the margins on top of losing on the field.
Is it okay for a fan to want to be there tonight and go, yeah, I want to witness the history, even though the history is dark and upsetting and probably makes a White Sox fan furious?
You bet. To me, it is. To me, it is, because if you still care, it's kind of like that game in Oakland when they had... Remember when they did it last year where they wanted to do...
Oh, that's right. They wanted to show the owner.
Show the owner that they could still come if they wanted to. You know what I mean? They could still do it. I forget how they framed that, but it was brilliant. And it showed an A's fan base that was pissed off, but showed you they still cared. And if you had given them real reason to care, they would have been there. So hell yeah, I support the idea to go. If they're going to get this one in tonight.
The two biggest White Sox fans at the station are over there, Shane and Tanny. If I offered you guys tickets, knowing that tickets over there tonight are like $10, but if I offered you guys great tickets, scout seats, would you go?
Scout seats, yeah. If I could sit there and I'm not paying for the tickets and I can get blasted and like embarrass Jerry Reinsdorf on camera because you're seen there in those seats, yes. But I'm not sitting in like 108.
I'll mark that.
Not because of those guys. Because
you hate them. No. Okay, we got
no, I don't. They
we
hate
know.
Me. Yeah, it's
we
different.
Know.
They
finally
hate me.
Said it on the air. We get it. You know, I would consider just to take my dad, because my dad, I haven't gone to a game all year. And I haven't gone to a game with my dad all year, so I would ask him if he wanted to go, but I'd have no interest beyond that. Even if my dad couldn't go, I would not go even for scout seats. I'm good
wow.
on that.
Wow,
yeah,
man.
Why? You know, like, I don't need to be able to be there to say that I was there, because we're here every day living this. You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
I
do
understand.
Miss the people out there. Like, unlike Shane, I miss the 108 folks.
No, I...
And I haven't seen...
Damn it, Christopher!
I haven't seen... I'm trying to think of if I've seen Len and DJ all year, because we didn't do any road trips, so I didn't see them on the road.
I went and saw them. The Cubs-White Sox game, I went and hung out, and I... DJ... Because I love DJ, and he is so good at bus tossing. He goes, oh, yeah. Hey, thought you were banned.
That's so amazing.
So I got a big hug from him. Saw my guy McKnight. Saw Len. Len was walking me through the compartmentalization of doing your job, even though the team is bad, and not letting it get to you.
Oh yes,
and it was really informative. And then we geeked out about microphones. He and I started talking about the sonics of microphones, and it was mm-hmm. awesome. But yeah, you're right. That's what I think is the horrible part for all of us, is that being out there, knowing how many good people are part of the White Sox organization that don't have to do with baseball ops. And I do think that Chris Getz has brought in some smart people on the baseball ops side.
Yeah.
It's just sad.
This would have been, or maybe tomorrow night, a good opportunity for what the A's fans did. The reverse boycott is what they called it. 28,000 people went to a game that would have probably had 4,000. And the players loved it. Marcotte said, if they had anger, it wasn't directed at us.
No,
we felt it. We felt it. Yeah. So, and it wouldn't be directed at the players, you know?
Sox fans, they know what's up. Like, they're very smart fan base. Very smart.
You guys pointed it out to me, what the social media for the White Sox has done. It's been a brilliant turn by their social media person.
Sox social media, whoever is running the Sox Twitter account, brilliant, brilliant stuff. Please keep it going over these next few days.
Our friends at WBBM told me, Brad Robinson, my guy over there at B-Rob, told me they reached out to the White Sox to try and cover that story that the social media had turned into what it was, and the White Sox declined to comment.
Man. Oh, no way. Yeah. No way. What mic did you and Len settle on? Because I think number one is the SM58.
We didn't settle on anything. We were talking stick mic versus headphone.
Oh, okay.
And he prefers stick mic, which makes a lot of sense. But it's weird because you don't usually see a lot of play-by-play guys doing that. They usually have the headset.
Yeah.
But it makes sense to me.
Speaks, where does that B-Rob nickname come from for Brad Robinson?
Yeah, it was funny. he reminded me a lot of the Commanders running back Brian Robinson.
I get it.
And they call him B-Rob.
It's good to have fun with names.
Pat knows. Pat knows that.
Yeah, what? No, I'm not going. Are you guys going? Are you going to go?
I'm not going to go, but there is a part of me that wants to go. If they lose tonight, I kind of want to go tomorrow.
How about, Lawrence, let's text during the sixth or seventh inning tonight. I'm only 19 blocks from the ballpark.
That's true. Head on over there.
If they win tonight, do we just go tomorrow?
If they win,
like if tomorrow's the record,
that's a good
I can
call.
Get us four tickets, no problem.
If they, if
like a, good seats.
If they win tonight,
yes. No, but not even credentials.
Love that.
I want good seats for us.
If they win tonight, let's have a show outing and go tomorrow.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea.
Deal.
But if they're losing tonight in the seventh, I might saunter over.
Jonathan Cannon tonight, I think.
Yeah,
so decent shot at a win.
Yeah.
Cubs baseball is next. Thank you so much for listening to Spiegel and Holmes. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 on The Score.
All right, guys. Have a great life.